The recent crop of college graduates are hitting the job market now. Some lucky grads maybe already found that job. One of the many bits of paperwork for a lot of those jobs is to sign up for a retirement plan. But it turns out a lot of Americans of all ages know next to nothing about retirement planning.
A survey of retirement age Americans on retirement literacy showed that only 20% could pass a retirement income quiz, even though over half considered themselves well prepared to retire comfortably. And the 2014 Retirement Confidence Survey showed that over a third of workers say they have less than $1,000 saved for retirement.
David Littell joins us now for some advice and encouragement on why and how to save for retirement. He's the RCIP Retirement Income Program Director at the American College of Financial Services. Dave, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Well, let's dig into this retirement literacy survey we referred to. You conducted that at the American College of Financial Services. What did you find out?
Well, we asked people 60 to 75 some questions about Social Security claiming, questions about housing and reverse mortgages, questions about how much they thought they could afford to withdraw from their savings and have that be sustainable throughout their retirement. And people didn't do very well. As we said, only 20% passed the test. The average score is about 42%. We asked 38 different questions. I think we were not terribly surprised that people didn't know a lot about the subject because it's complex, but it's also really important for people to understand the material in order to make good decisions. And as I say, we really limited the survey just to those people that have the most interest in knowing, that group that's 60 to 75, and they all had assets to invest.
Right, so these are the people you'd think among the U.S. population would be the best prepared. They're at or near retirement age. They're the ones who have been saving for the most part. Even they aren't having a lot of this retirement literacy.
That's correct, and that's disconcerting in part because the more you know, the better decisions you can make, and better decisions really mean more financial security in retirement. You know, we're trying to train everybody to know more about when they should claim Social Security, and deferring is generally a very good idea for people, and things like that can really matter when we talk about how much income you'll have.
So why do we have a problem in the U.S. with this kind of retirement literacy?
Well, I think it starts off with just general financial literacy, is relatively low in the United States, and I think that's part of it. Part of it here is that it's complex. I mean, in the past, people didn't have to make as many decisions about their own retirement. You know, when someone was in a company defined benefit pension plan and they were getting a monthly pension and Social Security, they didn't have to make a lot of decisions. Today, they have to make more decisions. Most people now are getting big lump sum distributions from their 401k plan, and they have to decide how to invest it and how to withdraw it and whether they should annuitize it all. So it is more complicated today. Investing it is more complicated because fixed income returns are so low. You know, in the past, when we thought about retirement investing, most people just invested for income. They invested in bonds and dividend-paying stocks and hung on to their assets. But we can't do that anymore, or at least right now, because of the investment environment.
And that shift you talked about, that's what we're referring to when we say defined benefit, what it used to be, versus defined contribution. Do I have that right?
That's correct. So defined benefit plan, the company would pay for the pension. They were responsible to fund it. And they'd give you typically a life annuity. And if you were married and had a dependent, you'd have a joint survivor annuity. So you'd have an income for life, and you might accumulate a $2,000 or $3,000 or $4,000 a monthly pension for your life. And you didn't have to contribute to the plan. You didn't really have to make any decisions other than taking a single life annuity or a joint annuity. That would be about the only decision you'd have to make. And now companies are contributing to defined contribution plans, which acts like an account balance. Most plans are 401k plans where participants make additional contributions and the employer will match. So now you have a lot more decisions to make, both on the savings side and on the distribution side, because on that distribution side, you get that lump sum benefit and you've got to decide what to do with it.
Talking to David Littell with the American College of Financial Services about what we know and what we don't know, and there's more of that apparently when it comes to retirement planning. So David, before we get into maybe some specific areas of advice or things we should know, more generally, what needs to change so that we, people who are going to retire hopefully someday, have a better grasp on all these complex decisions you're talking about?
Well, one, I think there's a lot of good information out there, and you would say some of the issues that we focused on a lot in the media would, let's say, for example, claiming Social Security, that it's a good idea to consider deferring. You do see some movement. I mean, I was concerned to see that only about half of the people we polled understood that your benefit would increase if you deferred all the way up to age 70, and that it was a good idea to defer if you expected a relatively long life expectancy. Those are key points about it. But only about half the people knew those things. But that's a lot better than a few years ago. I was just looking at another survey that said, 2011, that said only 17% of the audience understood the benefit of deferring Social Security. So I think we have to keep talking about it like we are today. We have to keep providing information to individuals. As I say, it's sort of this is a shift. I mean, our parents and grandparents didn't have to make all these decisions. So we have to, you know, constantly remind both young and older people that they're much more responsible for the decisions, and they need to, you know, that they really will benefit from. My main message is you will benefit from knowing more. You can make better choices, and you'll be more secure in retirement.
Well, let's talk about the young people in that equation. Let's say class of 2015, somebody just graduated. Good for them. They got a decent job soon after getting out of school. What kind of things should they start thinking about and start doing with retirement decades away in mind?
Well, right. And you know, what 22-year-old who's just got out of college is thinking about
retirement planning. You know? Woo!
Right. So they're not likely to have it.
Looks like we've lost David Littell. We'll bring him back as we talk about retirement planning in the United States. New surveys show even the people you might expect to know the most about what to do with retirement income, retirement investments, know what to do with it. Only about 20% passed a test on some of the basics of retirement planning. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Tell us your situation, what you know, what you wish you had known earlier on. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. David Littell is back with us. So, David, you're talking about that new job holder in their younger 20s. What do they need to start doing?
Well, they're going to typically go to if they go to a larger company or mid-sized company, they're probably going to have a 401k plan. And as we said at the very beginning, they're going to be given paperwork where they choose to participate or not participate in the plan. And giving up some of that precious take-home pay is going to feel difficult. But one thing we know about retirement planning is that the longer the saving period, the less painful it is to save for retirement. And I have just a simple example. If you made $40,000 a year and you decided to put in 6% in your 401k plan, so first off, when you put that in your plan, it's taxed. You know, you don't pay taxes on that amount, so it only reduces your take-home pay by $1,800. So that's one thing that's helpful. And then let's say the company matches 3% of that, which is fairly common. That means a $3,600 contribution. And if you save just that 1 year, so forget doing that every year. Let's just do that 1 year. After 40 years, so if you're 22, now you're 62. After 40 years, if you earn 8% each year, you'd have $80,000 for that $2,400 contribution that reduced your take-home pay by $1,800. That's a lot of money, and that's because of compounding. That's because of the long savings period that you benefit from that. Everything we know, you know, I have one study that looked at safe savings rates showed the safe savings rate if you saved starting at 35 and retired at 65 would be about 16% a year. But if you start at 25, it's only 9%. So it's much less painful to save for retirement if you start really, really early.
Let's move to the other end of this story. People just about to retire who have retired, they've hopefully saved some money. You talk about the 4% rule as one of the things we should know about. What is that?
Well, once you retire, and let's say you have this big lump sum from your 401k plan, you're going to have to decide how much you can afford to take out of that plan each year and have your money last a lifetime. So if you are just going to take withdrawals from your portfolio, you have to be very conservative. And one of the reasons is that the market goes up and the market goes down, you know, over time. And so you really have to be very careful in case you have a down market. So even if your average return was 7 or 8%, many people think they could take out that much. You really won't be able to because the market going up and down, we call that sequence of returns risk. And in that case, you really have to limit your withdrawals if you have a 30-year retirement period to around 4% of the initial value.
We're talking to Dave Littell from the American College of Financial Services about how and why to save for retirement.
And we're taking your calls now. What are your plans for retirement? Do you feel confident in your ability to retire comfortably? Have you done a calculation about how much money you'll need to live on after you retire? If you're already retired, nearing retirement maybe, what do you wish you'd done differently when you were younger when it comes to saving for retirement? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. We're continuing our conversation now with David Littell from the American College of Financial Services. We're talking about how and why to save for retirement.
And we want to hear from you. Do you feel prepared for retirement if you're nearing it? If you're starting out earlier on, are you starting to plan for retirement in your 20s, your 30s? What's the plan? Have you done a calculation to see how much money you're going to need to live comfortably after you retire? Call in at 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page. Go right to our callers now. We've got Ellen on the line in Milwaukee. Ellen, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you. I'm a terrific fan of public radio, but the area that is missed and is being missed today is a discussion that would include those of us who are on the low-income scale, and of whom there are many, many, many more, people like me who have a very small limited income, the working poor who can't save for next week, much less for retirement. Retirement scares the heck out of me. Not getting retirement, but getting old. Getting old and being poor in this country.
Ellen, thanks a lot for the call, and good luck to you. And David, all the retirement literacy in the world won't help if you don't have savings, you are not at an income level that really allows you to save. Is there advice, help out there?
Well, that is tough, and I feel for people in that situation. I think one issue for individuals, you know, that have really limited resources is this issue around when they stop work and when they claim Social Security benefits. So for many people, it's about a third of retirees, they get all of their income from Social Security. So if you wait from, you know, you can get Social Security benefits as early as age 62. If you wait to age 70, you get 76% more, or almost twice as much, by waiting to 70. So I think that's one thing that people can do is that's contingent on, you know, having the capacity to work longer, but continuing to include, to work if possible to afford to defer Social Security will help somewhat.
Thanks a lot for the call, Ellen. And on the topic of Social Security, since, as you say, a third of people relying solely on it, I'm sure a lot of other people, it'll be an important part of the retirement. When it comes to retirement literacy, do we pay enough attention to what we're going to do with our Social Security benefits?
No, still almost a half of people claim at age 62, even though it's a much better idea to consider deferring. The only person that really should claim early is someone who's single and has a very limited life expectancy. But for those people in good health, and especially for married couples, there's a real benefit to deferring. The larger Social Security benefit for a married couple will continue for the joint life expectancy. So maybe the single most important thing is for that larger benefit to be deferred as long as possible, or at least up to age 70. Past 70, there's no benefit of deferring.
Go back to our callers with George in Caledonia. George, hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to tell you my success story, not that everybody could do it, but when I was in my 20s, I stayed at home longer, saved up money, and I bought my first duplex with $10,000 down. And now that's turned into an 8-family that's just about paid for, and that's really the majority of my retirement from a $10,000 investment at age 28.
George, thanks a lot for the call. Well done. Congratulations on that. And that's a thought, David. I mean, you mentioned maybe people working longer later in life to defer taking the Social Security payments. Maybe it's a family adjustment. People defer moving out on their own to save up money to get that nest egg built up earlier on.
Well, yeah, building that nest egg early is really powerful, and because of the amount of time, you know, that you get compounding, so anything you can do to start early is really powerful, and that's certainly one way to do it. And I think our caller just he showed a lot of discipline in his financial affairs, and that's something we could all, including me, could learn from.
We're talking to David Littell. He is with the American College of Financial Services, talking about a retirement literacy gap. A lot of people don't know what they need to know, he says, and surveys say when it comes to retiring, even people on the verge of or in retirement themselves. Back to our callers now at 800-642-1234. We've got Bob on the line in Madison. Bob, hi.
Hi. Regarding when to start taking Social Security, everybody says wait as long as you can, but what about all those payments that you missed between 62 and 70? I figured it out, and it'll take me till I'm 80 to catch up if I wait till I'm 70.
Bob, thanks for the call. David?
Well, that's a great point. And age 80 is sort of the rule of thumb in terms of the break-even age. But what that really means is that if you live substantially longer than age 80, then you would be better off deferring to 70. So yes, you are giving up those payments. But what happens is if you live longer than age 80, then you benefit from deferral. And for a 65-year-old male, the average life expectancy right now, if you make it to 65, is almost 20 years. So it's like 84. It's a little bit more than age 84. So many people are likely to live that long. And again, if you're married, that benefit's paid out for the joint life expectancy of you and your spouse. So if your spouse is going to live 10 years longer, well, now it's as if you live to 85, it's as if it's paid to 95. So definitely a better deal to defer.
Bob, thanks a lot for the call. I will go now to Chris in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi, Chris.
Hi, glad to be on. I just wanted to share a piece of advice that my father-in-law gave me when I was first getting married to his daughter. He said that, you know, when I get myself into a job where I am comfortable and I start, you know, building some inroads, and as you get those raises, rather than making a mistake that I've seen a lot of my peers make, rather than getting that new car or finding that next new purchase, that new thing that's going to raise the monthly bills, put that raise into retirement and continue to build that as you go. You know, if you're comfortable and you can live on what you've got, why raise your expenses? You know, and it's something that's really worked for him well. They've got a good retirement set up for them, and I plan to do that for my wife and I.
Chris, thanks a lot for the call. Very interesting. And David, I think I've seen some companies, some corporations, you can set up a plan to automatically put any raise into retirement savings. Is that right?
Yeah, some companies will make that really simple for you. That's great advice, you know, because it's not as painful as reducing your take-home pay. You're just not increasing it when you get that raise. So I think it's a little easier for people. I also think maybe we should stop calling it saving, because what we're really doing is choosing to spend it now or choosing to spend it later. I think just that little, you know, at least in my mind, that makes it a little more comfortable for me to put that money away. It's still mine. I'm going to spend it. I'm just going to spend it later.
Well, it's an interesting psychological angle on it. If we approach retirement planning as sacrificing now, does that maybe make it less appealing to actually do it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You know, and some of the messages do discourage people from saving. When it's, you know, when we concentrate on needing $1 million or $2 million to retire on, it's easy to give up. You don't think you're going to be able to make that, and then you don't try at all. And everybody, no matter what age, can do something that's going to improve their situation.
So we've hit some of the basics, the 4% rule and saving early and things like that. What are a couple other things you just wish everybody knew about retirement that would make the next survey come out looking a little better?
I think I'd want people to know a little more about the role of annuities, because now that, you know, they're typically taking a lump sum from their company pension plan and they're not they're not getting an annuity payment like they used to in the defined benefit plan. If you take some of your retirement money and you purchase an annuity, well, then you get a guaranteed payment for life, and it gives you more security and make sure you can meet your basic expenses. And I think people don't really appreciate that. They seem, you know, it seems to be better. People are more comfortable having a large lump sum than a monthly payment for life. But the research actually shows that people who have more guaranteed income are actually happier in retirement, and I'm not surprised. It's nice to have that security. I saw that with my father. Actually bought an annuity when he was 84 years old. He's still alive at 103, so he was very happy with that decision.
Now, I'm hoping you can leave us with some encouragement, maybe even a bit of a pep talk. I think when people start to look at all that's out there, there's so much information, there's so many different options, and you're comparing apples and oranges and percentages and how many years and things like that. How can we start tackling this in a way that doesn't discourage us and just make us throw our hands up in the air?
Well, I think the very first step, regardless of your age, is to get in control, or maybe control is not the right word, to become more aware of your spending. So, you know, there's lots of great software now that allows you to aggregate all your accounts and see where your money is going. So I think that's kind of the beginning of any financial planning, is to know where your money is going. And that is often a motivator, you know, and then, you know, often you'll find places that you're spending money that really aren't all that important to you, and then now you've got a place maybe you can find some more savings. So I think that's a really good first step. And another step is to do just some sort of basic calculation about how much you need to save for retirement. And there's lots of software out on the web, or if you're working with an advisor, they can help you do that. And less than half of Americans actually ever calculate how much they need to save for retirement. So they go into retirement fairly blindly. And that's a task that I would encourage people to do, really at any age, to get their hands around this issue.
David, thanks a lot for joining us. That was David Littell, RCIP Retirement Income Program Director at the American College of Financial Services. He joined us to talk about how and why to save for retirement.